our president, Dr. Taylor, needs a lot of time to talk. I'm going to make this introduction very short and sweet. And you will have a chance to hear the more formal introductions. But you all know Beck Taylor, our president. He's entering his sixth year. Okay, I didn't have that right. So sixth year. I should know these things. We are really glad to get to hear from him, and then I'll have some closing remarks at the end.
Yeah, great. Thank you.
Be careful.
Well, good morning, everyone. I love the spirit of this event. It is it's really gratifying to see our campus abuzz again after what are always a little bit quiet summers. I spoke to our student leaders just yesterday and told them that while I was very excited to see them on campus again, I was very grateful to see them leave in May. And such is the academic calendar, right? We get to kind of go through these cyclical patterns of welcoming and saying goodbye and launching, and here we are again at the cusp of a new academic year. Very exciting. This is my 40th fall personally to prepare for a school year, and so I don't know what I would do if I had a real job and had to follow a real calendar, but I love the academic calendar, love the spirit of this event, and certainly want to add my warm welcome to all of you to this academic year. Last year, I had the opportunity and privilege to welcome Jason Thaxton as Whitworth's new board chair. Jason is entering now his second year in that important position. I would want you to know that Jason is a proud Whitworthian, that he is providing marvelous leadership to our board of trustees, our fabulous board of trustees, and that I share a very important and a good relationship with Jason. Jason lives here in town. He's an executive with Avista, and just so appreciate his willingness to be here this morning and to represent his trustee colleagues. So would you join me in thanking Jason and really all of our trustees? Thank you. And before I get too much farther, I would want to also say that, and I know Julie joins me when I say this, that it is just the most tremendous and profound personal and professional blessing for both of us to be in this community, to be serving you, to be walking alongside each of you and our students in this incredible journey of higher education. And so as we begin our sixth year, I am as excited as I've ever been, as optimistic as I've ever been about the future of Whitworth University, as excited about our mission and what we're trying to do here, and so really look forward to serving you, and I know I speak for Julie, whose birthday, by the way, is tomorrow, so you might say happy birthday to her. So I love the spirit of this event, as it should. We are eagerly anticipating the year. I did want to spend just a couple of minutes this morning talking about the events of the last 24 hours. Whitworth University, as you know, has been in the news of late for an unfortunate incident that occurred among some of our students. And I want to be fully transparent with you. I want to talk to you and update you on where we are on that situation, because if you're like me, you're likely getting some questions in the community or certainly paying attention to some of what's going on. So indulge me for just a second before I dive into the bulk of my remarks this morning. A group of student athletes unfortunately participated in a particularly insensitive act of cultural appropriation over the weekend. And what I mean by that is they, an attempt to mimic a music group, they dressed themselves, painted themselves black, donned Afro wigs, and then posted a picture to a social media account. And as you might expect in today's environment, that immediately got some attention and drew the concerns of many in our community. I think it's important to note that this is happening within a broader cultural milieu, a broader cultural context, that our country and indeed our community is in the midst of perhaps some of the most strenuous and strained racial relations that we've had. And that everybody's ears and eyes are focused on these kinds of issues. And so this unfortunate incident happened in the kind of cultural context that we find ourselves in. As best as we can determine now, these students acted largely out of ignorance and were largely not aware of the cultural significance of their actions. And that, I think, says, and something we can talk about later in another setting, I think that says something, perhaps, about the work we still have to do in our educational context as we prepare students to live in an increasingly diverse community. But I think it's important for us as a community to distinguish between intent and impact. There's no question that the impact of this particular incident has been far and wide, and that there have been many in our community that have been harmed, have felt belittled and marginalized as a result of a historical cultural appropriation, in particular the use of blackface. And so our community was disrupted, and people were harmed. And I think it's important for us to acknowledge that is true regardless of the intent of this particular group of students. I think it's important for you to know that we're treating this the way we would treat any incident of its kind. We are going through the due process that students are afforded through our student conduct area. That process will continue. Information is being gathered even as we speak. But it's also important to remind ourselves that student confidentiality is important as well. And we're handling this as an internal matter. No information will be shared with the community, despite the calls for such information. No information will be shared with the community about the ultimate outcomes of that student conduct process. And that's true, of course, for any of our student conduct cases that we manage on campus. I think it's also important for us to recognize that we're an educational institution, and that we're going to handle this incident as an educational opportunity for ourselves, certainly for the students impacted and for the students involved. And beyond that, we're a Christian educational institution. And so we want to highlight through that process Christian values and virtues that are important to our community as we come along all those who are impacted. And as we think about student conduct in the Whitworth setting, we think about really three outcomes, and maybe this is important for all of us to know as we think about living in community with primarily 18 to 22-year-olds. When students are brought under the purview of a student conduct process, there are really three outcomes that we are intending for that process. The first is that we want any behavior that might be detrimental to a student or to our community to stop. We secondly want to have some assurance that that behavior won't be repeated in the future. And lastly, we want to make sure that students and indeed our entire community have the opportunity to learn from perhaps mistakes that are made. So accountability is very important in that process, but important to our Christian mission, reconciliation and redemption are also important. And in addition to the educational outcomes that we'll be seeking, we will certainly be working toward those outcomes of reconciliation and redemption. We're also very aware of the scrutiny that's going on right now. The media firestorm and the maybe even more voluminous and loud is the social media firestorm, and perhaps some of you have seen that. We want to assure you that we're not allowing those things to shape and direct the decisions that we make as an institution. We know what our values are as an institution. We know the kinds of goals that we have for our community. We know that we're an educational institution and that students are going to make mistakes, and that we need to address those mistakes, but do so in a spirit of grace and truth. So know that even though these external voices are loud, and they would at times tend to shout us down in terms of the ways in which we handle this, that we're very resolute to handle this through the lens of Whitworth's mission and through the values that we have as an institution. We're very aware, too, that no set of actions will satisfy everyone in this kind of highly polarized case. So we have to let our values and judgment not be swayed by these external voices. Additionally, we're going to have the opportunity to lean in, as we often do, into these very difficult cases. And we're going to use this as an opportunity, not just for the students involved, but for our entire community. So you can look forward to opportunities to have continued community conversation as we get into the academic year. And finally, I want to tell you, because it will go out on a press release soon, that Coach J.L. Haggerott, the head, women's head soccer coach, has decided to suspend the players involved for one game today. You may know that they're playing a home soccer game today on our pitch, and she has decided, and she has the full support of Tim DeMond, our athletic director, and myself for that action, but those players will be sitting out this game. And as I said, our regular student conduct process will be continuing. And rest assured that all of the promises I've made about that happening in the context of our community values and our goals will be happening. So I wanted to let you know what's going on. I wanted to be very transparent with you. Obviously, from here on out, there's very likely going to be a lot that's going to be able to be conveyed because that's going to be under the umbrella of FERPA and all of our normal processes and procedures for student conduct. But if you would allow me, I'd like to open us in a word of prayer, particularly as we lean into this difficult topic as a community and as we set our minds for the rest of our time together, but as we also recenter ourselves to really come together in fellowship as a community. So would you pray with me, please? Gracious God, you are the God of reconciliation and redemption. You have taught us what that means through the person of Jesus Christ. We pray for the reconciliation, the grace and peace of Christ to be on our community, even now, as our community deals with difficult situations. And we pray, God, that through everything, through our handling of this particular situation, for the many opportunities we have throughout the year to educate our community on what it means to be a loving, grace-filled community, that ultimately your name would be honored and that the mission of this university would be upheld. For the students who were impacted by this particular event, God, we pray your special blessings. For those who were harmed by the insensitive act that occurred, God, we pray your blessings upon them. We also pray for those students involved. We pray that this would serve as a good learning opportunity, not just for them, but indeed for our entire learning community. And again, God, we just pray your covering over this. Help us not to be swayed by the winds of external pressures, to listen too closely to these voices that are not a part of our community and have very little understanding of what we're about here and what we're trying to do. God, help us to stick to our own values and lean on our own community members as we try to discern how best to uplift you and live into the mission of this university. And so, God, we give this situation and indeed this entire year to you, and we pray these things in Christ's name. Amen. Thank you for allowing me to address that. Well, I'm going to come down and do my normal. So I promise we'll be out of here by 12:15, okay? So that's kind of the timeline this morning, and then they're going to expect us over in the cafeteria for a great lunch. It is a privilege at the beginning of every year to be able to talk to you about the state of the university. But as I often mention, the state of the university is probably a fairly ambitious title for this presentation. Usually each year I try to bite off just a little bit of what's going on at the institution to share some information and knowledge to help you to discern what's going on within the context of the broader community. And that's certainly what I'm going to do today. But as I always do, I want to remind us of our mission. Our mission here at Whitworth is to provide our diverse students an education of mind and heart, equipping graduates to honor God, follow Christ, and serve humanity. Thank you for the ways that you live into that mission. Thank you for the ways that you so clearly articulate that mission, for the creative ways that you find to introduce this mission to our students and to our community members, and for the ways you use this mission as a lens through which you view all of the good work that you do here, both staff and faculty. It's always important to uplift this, I think, at the beginning of every year. We also have a vision statement that's part of our Whitworth 2021 strategic plan. Our vision statement is that Whitworth will deepen its commitments to academic excellence, to the integration of faith and learning, equipping graduates to respond to God's call on their lives with intellectual competence, moral courage, and deep compassion, expanded student opportunities for experiential learning, intercultural engagement, and postgraduate preparation will elevate Whitworth's standing as one of the finest Christian liberal arts universities in the country. And it's through that vision, that realization of the kind of institution that we are and want to become, that really guide our goals as a community within the Whitworth 2021 strategic plan. And just to quickly remind us of what those 8 goals are, we want to advance Whitworth's distinctive approach to the integrating of Christian faith and learning. We want to strengthen the intellectual vitality across all contexts of teaching and learning. We want to prepare Whitworth students to be truly global citizens. We also want to demonstrate courageous leadership in an increasingly diverse world. We want to elevate a liberal arts education as essential and relevant to all majors and careers, to enhance Whitworth's strengths in both graduate and continuing studies, to invest in Whitworth's employees, you, and support a culture of continuous improvement here at the institution, and finally, to exercise diligent stewardship in growing Whitworth's financial and capital resources. It is these 8 goals and the objectives and measures underneath them that really animate much that we do here at the institution. They direct resource planning. They help us to make difficult decisions as we're dealing with constrained or scarce resources. And they inform you and your daily work in important ways. And so I'm appreciative of the way this community has embraced the Whitworth 2021 plan. It's not a perfect plan by any means, but it does give us commonality, common ground, common denominator to articulate the work that we're trying to do together. And I thank you for your commitments to that. Let me guide you to a wonderful resource. Our Whitworth 2021 plan is on the website. Everything is up to date thanks to the great work of Ken Brown and Wendy Olson in our Office of Institutional Effectiveness. So you can go and look and be reacquainted with some of our goals and objectives and also the progress that we're making on many of those goals. And so one component of the strategic plan that I'm proud of is its transparency. We want everybody to kind of know where we are with respect to our goals. Now, we are beginning the 5th year of our strategic plan. So we've completed 4 years of this particular plan. And when we launched the plan back in the spring of 2010 for the fall of 2011, I promised this community and I promised the board that as we entered into the 5th year of the plan, that we would take a step back and reassess and reevaluate where we are with respect to our goals and objectives. And that's, in fact, what we're going to do this year. Let me just say just a few of the positives that I've seen through the lens of this strategic plan. I think the plan is aspirational. I think it really is, in many ways, it's a stretch. It calls us as a community to try to accomplish things that seem quite ambitious. And I appreciate that about the plan. It's comprehensive and strategic in nature. It really doesn't mean to micromanage the areas of the institution that you work in or lead in, but rather kind of give us this overall vision for the institution that you can contribute to. It's transparent and accountable. There's accountability built in. We built a lot of measures, what we call key performance indicators, that attempt, not always successfully, but attempt to capture what success might look like in a variety of different goals and objectives. And, of course, everything's online. I've had universities' presidents and chiefs of information call our office and say, I can't believe you put all of this online for everybody to look at. But I don't know, I think that's an aspect of the academy, right, that we're open and transparent with what we're learning and what we're doing. And so I'm proud of that aspect as well. We've made significant progress in the last 4 years. If you go on and look across all 8 goals, we'll celebrate some real progress this year in the plan. And I'm very grateful for that. Jason, I'm grateful that this has full board support. This is, in fact, the board's plan, and your endorsement of that means a great deal to our community. And the plan itself is informing the current fundraising campaign, the campaign for Whitworth. And right now, we're at about $70 million raised and pledged as part of the campaign for Whitworth. We've got 2 more years left in the campaign. We're seeing dirt turning out at the new Coles Music Center even now. And that all of those things are a product of the strategic plan and the kinds of initiatives that the strategic plan tries to empower. But we've had some challenges, too. We didn't anticipate, even in 2011, the volatility that we would experience in enrollment. And that has affected or created volatility in the kinds of investments that we can make in the things that we say are important to us. We've made little to no progress in some very important objectives. And so we need to take a step back this year and say, why is that? What can we do to better equip our community to meet those goals and objectives? We have some measurement uncertainty. As with any plan that's accountable, we've tried to pick some measures that give us some indication about whether or not we're actually making progress. But we've learned that some of those measures are more useful than others. And so this year we'll have the opportunity to take a step back and say, how can we make that accountability better by updating those measures? And of course, we know that the world has changed dramatically just in 4 years. And so any strategic plan needs to take account of the new realities that we're living into, the new opportunities, the new challenges, and we want to embed those in this particular review of the strategic plan. So this year we're going to be, I'm calling it a recalibration of the strategic plan. It's not a new strategic plan. It's not even a rewrite of the strategic plan, lest you think the stakes are higher than they are. It is really just an opportunity for us as a community to kind of refocus on the plan and ask how the plan is serving us as a community as it leads us forward in meeting our goals and objectives. Most of the goals and objectives, I suspect, will remain. Some objectives and some KPIs might be revised to reflect some of the newer opportunities and challenges we face. And I'm grateful for the continued stewardship from University Council for this particular strategic plan. We'll be leaning heavily upon University Council this year to guide this process, but rest assured we'll be involving the entire community in terms of receiving input and advice and counsel as we do so. So Randy Michaelis pointed me to this new exciting planning tool that I think we're going to use this year. If you'll click on that, Maggie, thank you. So if you'll scroll down, don't push that button yet, scroll down. What this great website has done is it has captured for us commonly, or I might even say overused, prepositional phrases in education for high-performing seats, for the 21st century learners, outside the box, through the collaborative process. So they've already captured all of this for us. If you'll scroll down a little bit more, Maggie, you'll see commonly used verbs, adjectives, and nouns that are used in higher education. Embrace, empower, expedite, collegial, compelling, competency-based, common core standards, competencies, convergence. You know, this is a tough list to master. So I don't think Randy has really fessed up. I think he's using this tool really for our accreditation purposes. If you scroll up the list, where is Randy today? If you scroll up the list, just press generate jargon. It's great. Here, this sounds good. We'll disaggregate literature-based higher-order thinking in authentic real-world scenarios. That sounds, what a great objective, right? Go ahead and press it again. We will innovate integrated goals through the big ideas. I like that one. One more. We will utilize literature-based efficacies with a laser-like focus. I like that. Maybe one more. We can just rewrite the plan right now. We will target strategic efficacy. Well, we've already used that one. Let's go to another one. We will orchestrate interactive efficacy, but we like that word, within the new paradigm. I like that one. So where's Randy this morning? Randy, thank you for that. Thank you for letting me have you can go back. Thank you for letting me have some fun at your expense. Okay, I wanted to just briefly mention our budget results. From fiscal 15, we had a very solid year, budget-wise and financially. We beat our revenue projections by some $1.85 million, in large part, as Cheryl has already alluded to, because of the additional revenue that our non-traditional programs have brought in. Because of your good stewardship, we beat our expense projections by some $1.35 million. And so that contributes overall to a $3.2 million underspend. And that is a wonderful outcome, particularly because we're reminded why we want to generate an underspend. You may remember that the university does not budget for depreciation. And so we have another unnamed constituent at the university called our facilities and our grounds and other things that we depend a lot on for the delivery of our educational programs. And so our history is to pour our historical underspend into things like our deferred maintenance. We have some $35 million of deferred maintenance at the university that we need to continue to invest in. One-time academic improvements, we allocate to Carol's division monies that she needs to buy equipment and to make renovations and to do other things that equip the academic program. And then we try to put some money in reserves as well to make sure that the institution is prepared for unanticipated challenges. So I'm very grateful for the health of the institution financially, budget-wise, last year. So here's the way I'd like to kind of use our time this morning. You all know that higher education is experiencing a lot of headwinds right now. It's a unique time, I think, for our industry. Not only are we facing economic headwinds that were mentioned earlier, the stagnation of real incomes, for example, among families who want to send their children to college, the underemployment and unemployment often of college graduates, all of these things are facing creating headwinds. But maybe more insidious is the skepticism that is at times providing our broader publics with respect to the value of higher education. More and more, I'm reading about the devaluing of higher education, the idea that higher education isn't as great a value as it once was, and that it's not important for the cultural and civic and educational fabrics of our society. These are disturbing messages. And then, of course, if we went into the context of Christian higher education, we know that there are many headwinds facing Christian higher education, as religious organizations generally are facing more scrutiny, and some might even argue being marginalized in an increasingly pluralistic society. So suffice it to say, friends, we're in a difficult industry at a difficult time. One of the more common concerns that I hear from you and that I heard from you recently is that you are concerned about the financial viability of the institution. You're reading, like I am, critiques of the economic model of higher education. You're hearing critics claim that perhaps institutions like Whitworth won't have a viable future. And these are important criticisms to hear because there's probably elements of truth to all of those predictions. But what I want to share with you today is perhaps the most detailed look that in this kind of group that I've ever kind of shared with respect to kind of the overarching economic variables that impact the institution. And the case that I want to make this morning is that while Whitworth is facing headwinds, and while we certainly don't know what's around the corner, and that we need to be thinking innovatively and creatively about ways to buffer ourselves from those headwinds, that Whitworth is a healthy place financially, taking all of those things into account. I would say fragile, but healthy. We need to be equipping ourselves and challenging ourselves to think about what we're doing in new and exciting and fresh ways, but that we are standing on a firm foundation. And I hope that the information that I share with you this morning can be the topic of conversation, continued conversation. There certainly will be questions that are generated by the information that I share with you today that you'll have, and I want to be open to those questions, and perhaps we need to create spaces for dialogue about those questions. So I don't want you to hear me say, this is the snapshot of the institution that I want to show you, and you just need to take it. But what I do hope is that this is a transparent look at where we are as an institution financially. The stories that Greg and Cheryl shared this morning, I'm so grateful that they did. That's what it's all about, right? Why we're here is not to manage a financially sound organization. Why we're here is because we're each drawn to the educational mission of the institution. And we see the transformative power that that education provides. But we can't do that work, friends, if we can't count on financial resources. And so by spending a considerable amount of time this morning focusing on this aspect of the institution, I don't want to send the signal at all that this is all I care about, or this is all the cabinet cares about, or that somehow this takes precedence over the important work that each of you does on a daily basis. But we've got to have financial resources, and we need to manage those well if we're going to extend the mission of the institution. So let me just share a few slides with you that I think give you a good overarching view of the financial health of the institution. Perhaps the one slide that I could show you that would tell you the most about our institution is this one. Despite the misspelling there at the top, this slide captures the Composite Financial Index, the CFI. It is a complicated accounting measure that measures a lot of things, return on net assets, free cash flow, the ability to cover debt, financial flexibility within our operating budget, a lot of things that financial folks and accountants would say are important to the institution. This is an index, so the number itself should not, it has no meaning in some sense. But our comparison with other institutions, like institutions, does matter. You'll see that over the last several years, Whitworth, which is the top bar, has continued to excel and actually begun to enter kind of the upper echelon of this composite financial index. And you can see where we stand relative to the 51 schools that we've identified as far west schools. Just below that, the national median across all private higher education. And then just below that, the median for member schools and the Council for Christian Colleges and Universities. I hope you look at this and say, you know, at least relative to those other programs and other schools, Whitworth has an average financial health that seems to be not only healthy now, but also increasing. This is the value of our endowment over time. Our endowment at the end of the 2015 fiscal year stood at just about $130 million. We are blessed to have an endowment of that size. Many of our peer institutions don't have this kind of an endowment. At the same time, we know that many of our competitor schools have much larger endowments. And those larger endowments help to fund many of the important activities that those institutions have. So at once, I want to be grateful for this, and I want to be grateful for the ways, even within the campaign for Whitworth, that we're finding opportunities to increase our endowment. But I also want to acknowledge that this endowment makes us no less tuition dependent. The work that Greg and Cheryl and their teams do, and indeed all of us do, in recruiting students to the institution is as important now as it ever has been. And I'll show you some reasons why in just a second. On a per student basis, that is on a per undergraduate full-time equivalent student basis, you can see that each of our students benefits from about $55,000 of endowment. So that's the endowment in some sense that is used to fund at least a part of the educational experience of our undergraduate students. With about a 4.5% spending rate, that equates to about $2,500 per student per year. That is nowhere close to the cost of educating a student at Whitworth. So that, again, at once we're grateful for a relatively large endowment, but let's not fool ourselves to thinking that this endowment, or even one twice its size, is going to help us to become any less tuition dependent going forward. As an example of that, we have a portion of our endowment that is set aside to fund scholarships. And you know how important scholarships are for our families and students. The average amount of allocation to students from that scholarship endowment is about $1,045. That is, of all of the scholarships that our students receive, and they receive hefty scholarships from the institution, only about $1,000 per student of that is subsidized by the endowment. Most of our discount or most of our scholarship that we give to students is unfunded, is what we like to say. That is, it is simply money off of the gross tuition. Okay, so one of our goals within the Whitworth 2021 plan is, in fact, to raise endowment, is, in fact, to raise more endowment to support scholarships. You're going to be hearing very soon that we have a new initiative now in the last 2 years of our campaign to really focus on endowed scholarships. But again, it kind of puts things in perspective, doesn't it, in terms of the ways in which our endowment supports the institution. And, of course, you can see the CCCU average there below. These are our sources of revenues. And I know not everyone in the back, perhaps even those up front, can see all this. The largest piece of the pie, of course, are our tuition and fees. And what I've done is I've actually put the 2005-06 revenues next to the 2015-16 revenues. So you can see not only how much bigger the pie is in terms of economic growth of our campus, but also the ways in which each of the pieces of these pies has changed over time. One thing you'll notice is that we haven't become less tuition dependent over time. In fact, we've become more tuition dependent over time. We see that we're helped quite a bit by our auxiliary revenue. That comes primarily through room and board revenues from the institution. We have endowment revenues, roughly 4.5% we pull off that endowment. We have our Whitworth Fund. That's what Whitworth Gifts means, this annual fund. And then we have some small amounts of interest income that we earn. And that's what makes up the nearly $70 million net budget that we have for the institution. So that gives you some sense of how important it is for the recruitment of our students and why, when we don't meet our goals in terms of enrollment, why we have to pull back and make difficult decisions about the choices we're making and where we spend our money. If we were to take a dollar of gross tuition revenue, so just look at tuition alone, okay, about 3/4 of that pie I just showed you. If we were to take a gross dollar of tuition revenue and then break it up in terms of where we're receiving that dollar, this is what this graph attempts to represent. About half of that dollar, 50 cents on that dollar, is paid directly by our families and students. Okay? The other half is made up predominantly, you'll see, by Whitworth Financial Aid. That makes up about 38 to 39% of that dollar. And then in incremental proportions, you can see starting at the top, we have about 3 cents or three and a quarter cents out of every dollar from federal student gift aid. This is Pell Grant, work study, things like that. State aid, primarily in the form of state need grant. Endowment, of course, endowment support. This is this funded endowment that I was talking about earlier. Outside private aid, and then the annual fund always contributes to that fund as well. So the thing to take away from this, I think, is that of that gross dollar of tuition revenue, our families are only paying about 50% of that, and we have other factors that are paying for the rest. This red sliver is one that I'm particularly concerned about. If you're paying attention at all to the national conversations around higher education, this is this red federal sliver here. You'll know that some of the skepticism that is surrounding higher education now is working its way into our political process, and many people are now questioning the massive federal subsidies that the government provides to our students. And so we need to keep a real eye on that, and I need to be spending good time in Washington, D.C., making sure that our legislators know the value of that investment and why our students need to continue to benefit from that investment. What I asked Ken and Wendy to do here is to capture the median family income of the families that are coming to Whitworth. Okay, so these are median family incomes for those families and students that are enrolling at the university over time. And at the top graph shows essentially the nominal amounts. That's how the median has changed over time. And the bottom graph is inflation adjusted. Puts everything in terms of 2006 dollars. A couple things to notice. One, we do see a market increase in the median income of the families that are attending Whitworth. But one of the headwinds that I mentioned earlier was the stagnant real incomes that are facing many of our families across our economy. I think that's one of the biggest reasons right now why parents and families are becoming more price sensitive. Why you're seeing a lot more price sensitivity on behalf of students. While they may, on the margin, be less inclined to have student debt, for example. Or might be, as well, why they may be infatuated about professional degrees and perhaps increasingly so not as much about the humanities or the liberal arts. There's not much, obviously, we can do about that bottom line. But it's something that we need to be paying attention to. I think all of you are aware that over the last 3 years, we've had historically low tuition increases. Last year, we had the lowest tuition increase that we've had at the institution, I think, in 13 or 14 years. I'm not going to come at you with a number today, but I will tell you I've challenged the cabinet, and I will challenge the university council to start with another historically low tuition increase going forward. And really allow that to drive our conversation and help us to make very difficult decisions. But I think this is an interesting graph. Maybe even more interesting is if we break up the income of our families and students into three tiers, those on the top in green above 90,000, those in the middle in orange from the 30 to 90,000, and the bottom from 0 to 30,000, you can see the proportional changes in our student body over time. One of the criticisms you're reading about higher education, and one that we need to be very careful to attend to, is the squeezing out of the middle class. And I know our financial aid folks know this very well, that those at the upper echelons of the income range and those at the bottom range, they tend to have a lot of resources, either their own or others, that help them to acquire higher education. But often it's the middle tier that has the most difficulty. And you can see that even in our own numbers, the kind of squeezing, if you will, of that orange tier. We need to be paying particular attention to this and redoubling our efforts to think about how we can provide access and affordability to all of the families that would want a Whitworth education. Yet another indicator of the financial strains of the economy, but also the kinds of students that we are attracting to the institution. This graph represents the percentage of our matriculating day students that are eligible for the Pell Grant. You can see that really over the five-year history indicated here, we've seen appreciable increases in that percentage. That's a good thing. We're if you ever hear critiques about, you know, higher education becoming less and less affordable for some groups, know that for many groups, higher education is as accessible as it's ever been in terms of the amount of gift and grant aid that's being provided. And we can see some of that in this slide. Now, one of the other concerns that you might hear as you're reading about higher education is that private institutions like Whitworth are increasingly having to give it away. Sometimes you hear this about discount rates or scholarships or something like that. And indeed, we can see here at Whitworth and across higher education that our discount rates are increasing. Back in 2005 and 6 at Whitworth, our blended discount rate, that is across all students, was about 38.6%, or 38.6 cents out of every dollar of gross tuition was subsidized by this unfunded discount that I mentioned. That has now increased across all classes to 48 cents out of every dollar. You can see that the trend among national privates is similar, and among CCCU institutions is also similar. One thing to note here is that there are real regional disparities. In the Northwest, for example, we tend to have much higher tuitions and much higher discounts than you might see among schools in the Midwest, for example, or even in the Southeast or Southwest. And so it's not necessarily an apples-to-apples comparison, but it's something that we need to keep track of, because if we're having to give away more and more of every dollar of gross income, then that obviously could impact the viability of the institution as we are trying to attract students. Here's just another way to see the same data. Again, over time, 2009 to 2014, these are the discount rates by class. And you can see in the gray bars here, these are our freshman classes, that has slowly increased. Now, at least in 2014, for our freshman class, about 54 cents out of every dollar of gross tuition was given in terms of unfunded discount. The reason why it decreases over time is because we don't increase scholarships over time. And so what happens is, as tuition goes up, our sophomores and our juniors and our seniors have to pay a higher proportion of their tuition as a result. So their discount rates begin to fall. Okay. So we need to keep an eye on that. Here's just a breakdown of the kind of institutional aid. Now, I'm talking about just aid from Whitworth University that we provide to our students. The blue bars are scholarships. Those are all merit-based scholarships. The orange bars are grants. Those are all need-based. And I think you all know that we're need-blind. We're a need-blind institution. We don't take need into account when we're making admissions decisions. Many schools take need into account as they try to shape their financial aid structure. We don't do that. We take the need that's presented to us, and we make admissions decisions regardless of the need that's expressed, which I think is a good posture to have. But you can see the slow increase in that number as well. Of course, as employees, we benefit from tuition remission and exchange, and that's another form of aid that our students get. And then finally, through endowment and other sources. So again, you can see the dramatic increase in the amount of scholarship support that we're having to give our students to continue to make Whitworth affordable. Now, one of the common refrains that I continue to advise the board on is that they needn't pay just attention to discount rates. That's, of course, the thing that they hear most about. That's the pressure that they're reading most about, is how much, you know, we're having to discount every single class. But remember that discount is just one piece of revenue. The other piece is the actual price that we're charging. And from an economic sense, what we want to do is really try, all things equal, we want to try to maximize the amount of net revenue that we're bringing in, and most ideally, net revenue per student. That's actually the dollars that go to contributing to the educational experiences of students. So even though discount has increased dramatically over time, as these recent graphs have shown, notice that our net revenue per student has also increased. That is, we're getting more resources per student each and every year. The top bar is the average tuition and fee revenue per full-time matriculated day. That's about that equates about to our tuition and fees each year, $38,000 per student. The green line is our net tuition and fees that's net of our discount, which is the orange line. And so what we want to do, and what Greg's team does so well, is to make sure that that green line continues to increase at enough of a rate that we can pay for the improvements, pay for the salary increases, pay for the things that we need to be doing here at the institution. So it's not just discount. If you guys are reading articles about discount rate, remember, it's a much more complex story than that, and I think we're managing that well. Okay, so I've spent quite a bit of time talking about revenues. Okay, the pricing equation, how we get our revenues, how we attract students here through scholarship and financial aid. This is the expense side. Okay? This is the way we spend our money. And you can see that over time, again, going from 2006 to 2015, not only the appreciable increase in our budget, but also the ways in which each of these pieces compares over time. And the first thing you should notice, and shouldn't be surprising to you, is that by a large margin, the biggest expense that we have, of course, are the salaries and related costs of employment. The next biggest, or close to biggest, actually it is the next biggest, is benefits. So if you take those two things combined, that is just supporting our personnel through salary and benefits, that gobbles up the vast majority of every dollar of gross revenue we have. That means that everything else that we have has to be put toward our academic programs, has to be put toward our facilities, has to be put toward all of the other needs of the institution. And of course, our most important resource at the institution is our people. And so it's not surprising, nor is it regrettable, that we're spending this much money or in making these kinds of investments in each of you. But other areas, of course, just our operations, which is really that gray, that general services gray bar. We have our maintenance of facilities and equipment. We have interest. Our interest expense, by the way, that's maybe one of the larger differences between the two. It's the kind of pinkish or reddish piece of pie there. It's gone up from 1.63% of our total expense budget to about 5.52%. We've actually incurred quite a bit of debt over the last several years. That's been intentional, to try to make up for perhaps some of the investments that we've needed to make over time. But that's something we need to keep track of as well. Then you've got utilities, you've got travel and professional development, materials and supplies, and so forth. So that's how we're spending each dollar. But I think, again, notice how similar the two graphs are. The economic model of the institution has not changed a whole lot in the last 10 years. The benefits area, of course, is one area that we've been paying a lot of attention to lately. And particularly, as the red graph in this particular graph shows, our health and dental benefit expense, that is the part of the health and dental insurance that the university pays for, has increased dramatically, and I don't like the way that curve looks, right? I just don't like the way that looks. It looks like an exponential growth to me. And so you all know the pressures that our economy and that our society are facing as it relates to healthcare costs. We're going to continue to have to lean in to those difficulties. We're going to continue to have to work with you on providing affordable or reasonable access to healthcare, knowing that that expense as a percentage of your budget is increasing over time. This is a big problem for our society and certainly a big problem and challenge for our institutions, but something obviously we're paying attention to. And then you see the other benefits that we pay, 403B retirement, tuition remission, FICA, Medicare, and so on. And just maybe a different way to express the same thing, the large purple lines at the right for each year represent the total amount invested in every employee in terms of benefits. So per employee, $23,000 in this current fiscal year budget. And then you can see how those have changed over time. The largest, of course, being the FICA, Medicare, health and dental being red, 403 being green, and then the kind of bluish in the middle being the tuition remission. Another common criticism that you'll hear in higher education, and it's one that we need to be paying attention to because there's some validity to it, is that more and more of our operational expense is being eaten up by administrative costs rather than educational costs. That the institution, perhaps even Whitworth, is employing more and more administrators and perhaps on the margin not enough instructional faculty. Okay, I wanted to kind of address that issue. On the top bar, what you'll see are the student undergraduate, these are all undergraduate numbers. These are full-time equivalent students per faculty member. Okay, now I need to wave my hands around a little bit on this one. You may be a good consumer of the work or the publications that Greg turns out that says that our student-faculty ratio is 11 to 1, right? Who remembers that ratio, right? That is the U.S. News and World Report calculated ratio of students to faculty, okay? That includes me as a faculty member. That includes Scott McQuilkin as a faculty member. A lot of other folks who have faculty appointments but are not teaching any classes. So that obviously deflates that number. And that's true, by the way, for every institution that is reporting to U.S. News and World Report. So we're not being disingenuous at all by reporting an 11 to 1 student faculty ratio. But if we take into account that I don't teach any students or that even some of you faculty members are on maybe half-time teaching loads and maybe you're teaching or maybe some of your teaching time is now being allocated to administrative duties, that's what this line tries to capture. So what we see is that the real number is about 18.3 students for every faculty member, and that's coming down over time. In fact, one of our goals in the Whitworth strategic plan is to bring that number. Who knows the number that we're trying to get to? No? 17.5. Okay, I should have brought my candy today. 17.5. We're making some progress toward that. But also notice that even though it is true that we're spending a greater percentage of our budget on administrative costs, we've got compliance issues, we've got other complicated issues that we need to focus on, which require additional administrative staff, notice that our students per staff and our students per total employee on an FTE basis are relatively constant. Okay? And so, again, I'm not saying that we don't need to watch that and make sure that we're not constructing a bloated administrative staff at the campus. We need to serve our students well. But at the same time, over time, I think we've managed this pretty well, and our student-to-faculty ratio is coming down as we were hoping. Another common topic is debt. And what we've done here, and these are going to be too small for you to read, but across the bottom of this graph, you can see the average debt for Whitworth, which is in the red, on the very far left, Gonzaga, PLU, UPS, Seattle University, SPU, and then our publics, University of Idaho, EWU, Central Washington, WSU, Montana State, Oregon State, University of Washington, Western Washington. notice that among our private peers, our students are graduating with a lot less debt, which is a good thing. Now, I'm not saying that $25,000 is a number, you know, just to say, huh, you know, just $25,000. But relative to our peers, and even, in fact, relative to many of the state schools, our students are graduating with far less debt. And that's a good thing. We need to monitor that. But what are they paying for, right? In one way, they're paying for a good educational experience. And, of course, we can think of lots of measures of that educational experience, but one of those measures is, you know, how many of those entering freshmen actually graduate in 4 years, okay? And that's what that line graph intends to represent. So, Greg, I hope you'll include this in your slide deck for admissions. You know, with a 65% four-year graduation rate. Now, by the way, our six-year graduation rate, which is the rate that we publish in our strategic plan and other things, is 75%. So 75% of all of our freshmen that matriculate on day one graduate within 6 years, okay? But you can see expressed as a four-year graduation rate, we compare pretty favorably to most of these schools, particularly when you take into account the debt that those students are taking on. Many of you know that I follow social media. Unfortunately, I've been doing that over the last couple of days. But one of the things I noticed a few days ago was, maybe you saw this, I saw in a matter of a couple of days, three of our recent graduates posing with brand new cars, right? You know, hey, my new first new car, great. I mean, and it is exciting, right? My guess is that they're also going into debt on those brand new vehicles for about the same amount, right? About $25,000. The key thing is that that asset, that car, will be worthless in 6 years on the books, okay? Now, it's an important thing. We all need cars. I'm not trying to say that's not a good purchase. But imagine the difference of our community conversation if we could extol the virtues of higher education and say, for the same amount of debt, you're not investing in a depreciating asset. You're investing in an appreciating asset, one that will pay dividends, not just monetary, but so many other kinds of dividends over the course of a lifetime. And by the way, the monetary dividend is about $1 million now over the course of a lifetime. So maybe we can start talking to our students about good debt and bad debt, right? Now, again, I don't mean to poo-poo or minimize the $25,000, but I think it's important to keep it in context as we're talking to our various communities. And then my final slide. We are an important institution to this region, and I think increasingly we're being recognized as such. Whitworth University is an important economic contributor to the vitality of the Eastern Washington region. If we just do a back of the envelope, and by the way, for the business folks in the room or economists in the room, they'll know this is pretty unsophisticated, but it's a pretty good approximation of the economic impact of Whitworth University. If just over the last 10 years we add up our payroll and our non-operating capital expenditures and our student spending and our direct Whitworth spending, and multiply that by a fairly conservative economic impact factor, we're generating over the last decade about $1 billion worth of economic value to this region. So know that not only are we contributing to mind and heart education, not only are we providing transformative educational experiences for our students, but we're contributing to our home, where we live. And as Spokane goes, so does Whitworth. And so we can be proud about the ways in which each of us is contributing and that the institution is contributing. As I said, my goal today was simply to try to give you at least a little bit of a view, 30,000 foot, granted, of the economic factors that really are driving the institution. We're facing economic headwinds. We're not always going to have all the money we want to do the kinds of things that we know we need to do. But despite those headwinds and despite the challenges we're facing, because of your stewardship, because 600 students every year decide they want to attend Whitworth University, because of the generosity of our donors, we can say that I think we're on firm financial footing. Doesn't mean that we should be looking forward. Doesn't mean that we shouldn't be thinking about the next crisis or the next opportunity for us to be better with our money. And there are many ways that we can do that. We need to continue to be creative. But I don't want you losing sleep, okay? I hear from so many of you who just are so concerned that, you know, we're the next institution to go under. That's not true. We're far from it. And in fact, I think if you look back at the last 6-7 years, you'll say, you know, despite some belt tightening, despite some difficult decisions we've had to make, and despite not being able to support you as employees in all the ways that we would want to, despite all of those things, the institution continues to be on solid footing. We can be very grateful to God for that. So I hope this is useful and informative. I'll publish these slides so that you can take a look at them. Feel free to ask questions. And of course, this is just, you know, a snapshot of the institution. We could have talked about so much this morning, but I thought that this would be an important part of kind of grounding you in the realities of the economic circumstances that we live in. Thank you for the work that you do. Thank you for the ways that you contribute to all of the pictures that I've shown today. Most importantly, thank you for the ways you impact the lives of students, because again, it's those stories, it's the narratives of our students, it's the ways our students are being equipped to provide leadership in the world and through a Christian lens. That is the value of Whitworth University, and we're grateful that we have the resources to be able to do that. So God bless you all. Thank you. Have a great year, and please don't hesitate to let me know how I can be supportive of the work that you're doing. Thank you.